You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for April 4th, 2014. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside Noah's totally accurate inflatable ark, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal. Hey, Blue Gal.
Hi. You know, I love the scene where Cesar Chavez tells Russell Crowe he can't feed his CGI animals those California grapes.
Yeah.
And then what, you remember what happened after that? It was so cool.
It was, I think Captain America shows up with the Winter Soldier and they all go have brunch at the Grand Budapest Hotel, if memory serves. Having seen none of these movies,
no,
but way too many trailers.
We can't go to movies anymore. We can't afford it.
But we see lots of trailers.
We do. We see lots.
Actually, I'm probably going to take...
Junior dude wants to go see Captain America. Will happen.
Much have to.
I have a feeling, yeah.
And just before it starts, I'll say... the Winter Soldier is Bucky. What? That's a spoiler alert, by the way, if you didn't know.
Well, you should. But is that? Do you know that from the comic books, or do you know that from?
I know that from my industry insider and the trailer and a bunch of other people.
And watching the first movie.
Yeah.
Yes. We have to get onto the meat of our podcast.
Yes.
But, have you heard that? Hold on, I want to Google this to make sure it's not a joke before I report on it. Oh, yes, it is. It was an April Fool's joke, thank God. Keanu Reeves, did you hear about this?
No.
There was an April Fool's joke, Keanu Reeves in Citizen Kane.
Oh.
It was an April Fool's joke.
Is he playing the sled?
Dude, whoa.
Hey.
Every time the sled stops, it's whoa.
Yeah. As a plank of wood, he's very good.
Yeah, I think so, too. Yeah. I think so, too. And he was perfect for The Matrix.
He was.
You know?
He was.
You could cast him right as, like you say, as a block of wood and have a bunch of stuff around him, and he just goes, whoa.
If the sled drops below 50 miles an hour.
Everybody dies.
Everybody dies. Wow.
All right. Well, we have had some... very alarmed emails come into our email box.
Primal screams, if you will.
Primal screams, which is...
Justifiably.
Justifiable primal screams.
Absolutely.
Based on the McCutcheon decision. Even Jon Stewart lost his sense of humor over this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sad. But...
Yeah. By the way, before you go on...
We're going to read Robert's letter. Do you want to read it like we did yesterday where we were singing it like it was Les Mis? Or... That's right. We're not trying to be insulting. It was just kind of fun.
No, we did a dry run yesterday.
Yeah.
And, with Skype problems, and we decided to sing it all the way through. And it turns out no one wants to hear me sing.
No. But Robert sent us a letter, and his letter was typical of the emails that we got. Go ahead.
Let me just say, one person thinks that the McCutcheon decision is awesome. And that one man is David Brooks of the New York Times.
Oh, he does? Well, you know who else thinks it's awesome, though, is
Rich Lowry.
Mitch McConnell.
Yeah. So
Mitch McConnell says it brings more people into the political process.
Yeah.
Which all know is exactly what the Republican Party wants to do.
Sure. More all the very, 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 very rich boys to his yard. So, yeah. Yeah. But yeah, all the usual conservative, neoconservative douchebag suspects think it's a fine decision. And expand something free speech, which is ridiculous. I mean, last night, Jon Stewart really did just lose his sense of humor entirely and just start lecturing people, which is sort of how Mort Saul went down in flames. You know,
bless his heart.
When you start just showing up at your comedy gigs with a copy of the Warren Report and just reading it,
everybody gets a little bit upset.
It's like, I get it, and you're right. But I really came in for the funny. And Jon Stewart is a funny guy, and I like the show. But it really, this was the week when one of the occasional weeks when it was just so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so clearly that this is a plutocracy.
And this is corruption.
We're just going to side with
the court is corrupt.
And we're not corrupt in the narrow Robert sense. but in the very broad sense that they have been bred as creatures from their youth to think this way. Mm-hmm. They have been, you know, this is a case where if you have $10,000, you can bribe a congressman. Actually, that's probably not true anymore. You're going to need a lot more than that. Maybe an alderman. For 10 grand, you can buy an alderman for a couple of votes. But if you have $10 billion, mm-hmm. you can buy the entire
every state house, right. Every state house in the United States, you can buy. And then you own politics and government.
Not just state houses.
For 50 years.
But you can buy
city councils. Yeah.
Think tanks and newspapers and magazines. And you can just so completely pollute the groundwater and sow the soil with your ideology that the things that grow out of that ground are going to believe what you believe because that's what they've always believed because they've been bred to believe that. Yep. So anybody coming out of the Koch brothers terrarium has been bred since they were itty bitty to believe that free markets, lower taxes, limited government, no government, blah, 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 and just reiterate that over and over again. And they know that no matter what happens to them, they're going to find a job. The Koch brothers will take care of them.
It's a career move. Yeah.
Yeah. There's no line between politics or media or think tankery or lobbying anymore. They're all the same job on the right. They're all the same job. So the idea that a specific dollar amount is going to corrupt a specific congressman is a bad thing. But they've corrupted the entire process to produce perverse and evil outcomes. And of course, people are pissed about it, including Robert.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so, Robert says, I am done with it all. I will never again be represented after the newest strike down of campaign contribution limits. We now have a plutocracy. At least before this ruling, they feigned democracy. Every election hereafter will be kabuki. Democrats and Republicans will be the same. In blue states, the Maud Ardent Democrats will be propped up by money, and they will do the bidding of money. In the red states, it will be vice versa. Still, there will still be wedge issues to give us proles and outer party members something to argue about, but it will be meaningless. Moneyed interests will be the only interest. You will see more states be bought and paid for, like North Carolina. Private sector unions will continue to decline, and public sector unions will be rendered impotent. Alec has won. Sorry for the doom and gloom. I just do not see an upside to any of this. They have more billionaires, corporate Americans, and Wall Street behind them. With apathy and ennui, Robert. And I just want everyone to step away from the Zen Buddhism for just a minute. And realize that there isn't just only now. There's the past and the future. And yes, the Supreme Court can make decisions that will last 30 to 50 years if we don't overturn them. But it's important to remember the past. And the last time we had an oligarchy like that was right before the Progressive Era.
Yeah.
Because there is a pendulum and there is a reaction. And we have a lot of tools at our disposal to fight this. I mean, you and I are talking on one of them.
Yeah. And just so to let you know how unfair this is.
Yeah.
I mean, in addition to having a theology degree, Blue Gal has a history degree.
Yes,
so she's actually talking with a degree of expertise you are not going to find.
Certification in high school history too. So, yeah.
So read David Brooks for the fact-free bullshit right-wing version that he gets paid a fortune to write for the New York Times. And then come over and listen to Blue Gal talk from a learned academic point of view of how the arc of history is indeed long. And, you know, and just to set some context, I hate to put it this way. Nobody ever promised you a rose garden.
Yeah.
You know, the liberal project
takes forever. And there's never going to be this one moment where you go, oh, great. Now we get to win the war on poverty and ignorance.
You signed. I hate to tell you this because you signed on to a life of disappointment and backsliding and heartbreak. Not just once, repeated, painful heartbreak. You will invest in people. Yeah. You will give your heart and soul to people, and they will disappoint you and break your heart, and you will look like a fool. You know, there's that fool for Christ thing that you just keep making an ass of yourself, and you keep flinging yourself back into the battle because you know that the project of democracy and project of liberalism is multi-generational. And
they're going to crucify you.
Yeah.
That's
going to happen. So wrap your head around that.
Yeah.
And the fact that the people during the Progressive Era were killed for this.
Yes. Yeah.
And they fought and died for this.
Yeah.
And now we're letting it slip away, and eventually it will ratchet back forward. It might not even be in your lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
If you're my age, you might not live to see voting rights extended to all Americans again until you are well into your, you know, century year or dead.
I was thinking this morning, actually, it's more important that we have a black attorney general.
Yeah.
Ah. 50 years than a black president, because
yeah.
the fight is right there with yeah. making these southern states cut it out with their white supremacy.
Yeah.
And I don't mean people that live in the South. We have a lot of listeners in the South who are totally down with this. I'm talking about the zeitgeist of white supremacy that still pervades lots and lots of this country.
And doesn't go away. It didn't go away. We had 600,000 American boys dying in the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
We had bloody conflict. We had battles that were the size of wars
mm-hmm.
during the Civil War. We had, as I said many times, the last time these people changed their minds, were forced to change their minds, it took Union bayonets to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't change their mind, because they rose again through Jim Crow. And that didn't change their minds, and they rose again through a whole variety of segregationist laws. And they rose again with redlining, and they rose again with – and they hate gays for the same reason they hated blacks, because yep. the Bible tells them so. This mentality, this deeply American psychosis, this original sin, is not going away. You can, like the Romans say about the jungle, you can drive it away with pitchforks, but it always comes back. So the liberal project is to keep this shit at bay and keep shrinking it and shrinking it like a tumor every generation until it gets small enough to be a shameful inconvenience, but mm-hmm. not the governing philosophy of your fucking country.
Mm-hmm.
And that's... takes a long ass time. It's exhausting. And every now and then you want to throw the towel in. I know I do.
Yeah. And you and I have a rule in our marriage that
yes.
only one of us can be in complete despair at a time. and very often, as the Irish writer, you get first dibs.
I get first dibs on on soul crushing despair. Uh-huh. And but
I
that's
want to say just, you know, that what I was thinking about when I heard this decision was, okay, here's where we are.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the problem that we as progressives have been given to solve in this moment. Would I trade places 2014 with 1954?
Well, as a white guy,
as me.
As a liberal lady,
racial equality and gender equality and marriage equality and
you're kind of
1954. Would I change places in 1854? Absolutely not.
Bernie is a witch in which pretty much every generation.
Yeah. 1934. Absolutely not. You know, I would not. Can you imagine facing that world of fascism and Europe being taken over and poverty everywhere
and hopelessness,
utter hopelessness. And the only way to get around it was the drug of Busby Berkeley alcohol.
Two generations ago, it was Rick Blaine from Casablanca. Well, I stick my neck out for him. He was the ultimate cynical liberal.
Yeah, he was.
He was the guy who said, screw it. I have seen this all before. I have fought.
We have lost. I'm going to sit in my bar and I'm done.
Fuck it.
Yep.
And he, because he's had it. He's given his heart over and over again and had it broken over and again. And he's done with it. He's just done.
And he learns from Victor Laszlo that sacrifice is going to continue to be asked of you.
Yes.
So get over it.
Because, you know, if you stop breathing, you'll die. And if you stop fighting for these causes, you'll die. And the world will die.
Yep.
And it's sorry, you're wired that way.
Yep.
And there are often times when I wish I weren't wired that way. I wish I could be a blindly faithful fundamentalist more often than I care to think. Because it's so much easier.
It is easier.
It's just
mentally
so
and emotionally easier.
Easier,
you think. To
just
be...
lay your burden down and say, this book has all the answers, and anyone who doesn't agree with me
is persecuting me. And you get to walk around being persecuted by people that don't believe in what you believe in.
And you get to be so righteous, and you feel like God's on your side all the time. And then one day you look in the mirror and you see Don Rumsfeld staring back at you.
Oh, God.
You realize, I've done something horribly wrong with my life.
No, I haven't. I didn't read that. I didn't read those torture memos.
No. If you haven't seen it, you should definitely go see at least clips of Don Rumsfeld, the documentary by Don Rumsfeld. if only to understand what the absolute purest form of distilled conservatism looks like.
It's this complete. Are there birds in the background in your?
Yes, there are.
Oh, it's spring. Yeah, see, it's spring has come anyway.
And there's something about the birds and the eaves of the madhouse.
Uh-huh.
I forget which it wasn't James Joyce. I forget who said that. I'll have to look it up. See,
oh, yeah.
I got bits and scraps of poetry floating around in my head.
But anyway, the distilled conservatism of Donald Rumsfeld, yeah, which has been boiled down till the pot is dry.
Complete narcissistic denial of everything you just said. No, I don't believe anybody ever suggested that Saddam Hussein, blah, blah, blah. Here's a film of you saying exactly that fucking thing. And just look on his face like, I don't care. I don't believe it. I deny it. It didn't happen. And I'm not going to accept what I said.
I'm perfectly happy with myself and where I am in the world. So,
and I'm richly rewarded for my psychosis because I side with the rich. I side with the rich and the powerful. And I'm willing to kill anybody who makes those people unhappy or uncomfortable. And that's what's coming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we lay down our arms and say, that's it, we're done. That's what your future looks like forever.
So I want to ask our listeners to take care of themselves. I mention that every once in a while. If you need a break from politics, it's perfectly okay to take a break.
Hang up on us. Go.
Go take a walk. Go listen to the birds sing. Or you know, take up knitting. That's what I do. I knit.
Look at
pretty yarn and pretty colors. But the other thing is, too, don't take it all so seriously all the time. Try to have a little fun.
And I remember how despairing I was in 2004.
Yeah.
World had ended.
Yeah.
I could not. I stumbled. I couldn't believe that people had reelected George Bush.
Yeah.
Just couldn't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
And I stumbled around and just looked. I looked for answers. And all I saw was jeering, mocking conservatives going, ha ha, fuck you. We won. You lost.
Yep.
And I had done this for years. I re-upped my decision to keep mental notes of what these people were saying and doing real time, because eventually it's going to come back to haunt them.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, everything turned around in the sense that liberals were proved to be right once again. They never took any responsibility for the shit they said or did. But what I did find was I stumbled into this blogging world.
Mm-hmm.
Where there were people who thought like I did and believed like I did and talked in a language I understood.
And appreciated you.
Well, but most importantly, I didn't feel crazy or alone.
Yeah, right.
I still felt sad and pissed, but I didn't feel like I was completely stranded and alone.
Which is so wonderful about the family that we've developed online with our podcast listeners. I mean, feel free to email us. I know I say that at the end of the podcast, but, you know, the emails that we've gotten this week have been, oh, my God, what is going on? You know, and it is perfectly okay to vent with us. We are strong enough to take it, although I get about 800 emails a day for various places. So
yes,
that doesn't mean we're going to respond, but we do read every email that comes.
We do.
So
in that vein,
of
hopelessness and
let's talk about the Ryan budget. Can we do that?
I want to mention one thing before we do that, and that is Russell King.
Yes, yes.
The guy who
American Dad.
He wrote
a big, long, linked blog post. How many years ago did he write that?
He wrote that 4 years ago.
Wow.
4 years ago. This last month, I think, this last week, perhaps, he wrote this magnificent, beautiful, splendid, well-researched, aggressively well-researched thing called An Open Letter to Conservatives. And he said, look, I was a conservative. I'm writing a letter because I miss you. I want you back, but you've lost your goddamn minds. And you really need to stop doing a lot of things and quit saying things that just aren't true and quit lying to yourself. And this was the thing that made it so powerful, was that this was a conservative talking to other conservatives. And secondly, it was so well documented. Mm-hmm. It was just link after link after link of him saying, you can't say this and then do that, which is the exact opposite. You can't keep hating. You can't keep using vicious, toxic hatred of largely imaginary liberals as your entire philosophy. And you can't keep being fucking hypocrites about everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he just, it was so heartfelt and so long and so well documented, and it went everywhere. It was linked by everybody. And 4 years later, it's gone. It's gone from
talk. What did you say on your blog?
It went from profound to 404 not found.
Yeah.
In 4 years, and it's gone. It was strong enough to be recommended thousands of times, linked thousands of times. It made it onto basic MSNBC cable. They interviewed the guy on the Dylan Radigan show, who is also now gone.
Uh-huh.
But this was sort of the perfect test case of, all right, we're going to line up words like a linear accelerator, like a magnetic gun. We're going to line up so many arguments so well and so powerfully that nothing can stand in our way. That surely, given this monumental edifice of documented evidence, some conservative somewhere is going to turn a corner and say, you know what, maybe you make a point. And it never happened.
Yeah.
The comment section of that blog and every major blog that carried it filled up with conservatives mocking and jeering and liberals are worse and blah, all the fucking troll stuff that conservatives mm-hmm. just mm-hmm. are now. These were his theses. You know, this mm-hmm. this was Martin Luther.
Yeah.
And this
if you just prove it enough, people will come around.
And nothing and happened.
It doesn't
nothing.
Work
it didn't
that
make
way.
No difference yeah. at all. I mean, yeah. he turned it into a book. I hope he made a lot of money. I still look at it. I have recreated it and put it on my blog, just based on the cached copy I could find one place. I don't want it to go away. I don't want it to disappear.
Mm-hmm.
But as an example of a magnificently futile effort
mm-hmm.
in trying to reach conservatives, if it's 2004 or 2014 or 2010, whatever at the time, and you're still a conservative, mm-hmm. if you made it all the way through the Clinton and Bush years, and you're still a conservative, then you are no longer within the realm of reason. You cannot be reached by reason and evidence and facts and causality. It cannot be done. Therefore, what do? Once you've reached that conclusion, then life gets very interesting because you realize you have to write off half the electorate or a third of the electorate, and you have to start changing your strategy a lot. And my party doesn't do that. My party has not caught up with me. My liberal media has by and large not caught up with that form of thinking. There's still this fantasy that if we just light our hair on fire and run in circles enough, or if we just pretend if we just keep acting civil and let them punch us more, things will get better, and they won't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my mission. My mission is to convince Democratic centrists that they have to stop doing what they're doing and start calling Republicans the monsters they are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's not going to happen. And speaking of monsters and Republicans, the Ryan budget.
I just have one question about this Ryan budget that he yeah. released. Why?
That's a really good question. I wish I had an answer. I think it's because he's the numbers guy. And,
and he's so not.
Well, I think he wanted to prove his, you know, his badass credentials again, or reburnish his badass credentials.
And this is a way to sort of introduce himself to the voters of Iowa. Is that
I have no idea.
It boggles my mind.
It's like shooting a clown. Prove that it's to prove that you're one of the young guns.
Uh-huh.
That you're willing to privatize everything, gut every program for poor people,
mm-hmm.
and of course this message would have played really well 3 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
At peak Tea Party.
Yeah.
Remember, there is no Tea Party.
There is no Tea
but
Party.
Of course, now we have a problem. Everybody knows Paul Ryan is a fraud.
Yeah.
Everybody knows his numbers are bullshit. Everyone knows that they all come with this giant asterisk. How are you going to pay for all the tax cuts you want to do? Well, you know, it'll work itself out.
Well, and when even Sarah Palin.
Well, and this is the problem.
This is so funny.
Once they start eating themselves, once the crazies have taken over, you can never be pure enough.
Yep.
So Paul Ryan's budget, for everyone who's not completely psychopathic,
mm-hmm.
is clearly a document that is full of hatred and contempt for poor people and minorities and anybody who's not rich and white, frankly.
Yeah, it's not a numbers document. It is an ideology hate document based on the psychosis mm-hmm. of a woman, Ayn Rand, who had a very damaging childhood.
Yes, a miserable childhood.
And I feel sorry for her from that standpoint, but I do not feel sorry for the damage she has inflicted on the national dialogue.
She had apparently a very traumatized childhood in Stalinist Russia.
Right.
And she got out of Stalinist Russia.
Told her that they loved her from the time she was born until adulthood.
Well, she got out of Stalinist Russia and came to America and went to work in Hollywood. Yes. And basically imported the sense that anyone who wants to tax anything is a Stalinist.
Yeah, yeah.
No, no, they're not.
Yeah.
No, this is the price of civilization. Taxes are the price you pay for a civilization. But she imported this very stark view of the world. You're either a fascist and a Stalinist, or you love free markets.
Mm-hmm.
There's no middle ground. And so anyone who attempts to raise taxes for any reason at all for anything is a communist Stalinist bastard.
Well, and no one will ever take anything away from me and hurt me ever.
Exactly.
So it's all about me. And if you're reading what I'm writing and believing it, it's all about you. Don't let anybody take away your stuff and what you own.
And Paul Bryant,
when you see a child,
yeah,
someone that's been raised that way, and you know, I'm not trying to psychoanalyze her. I'm just saying the whole basis of what these 13-year-old boys who never grew up politically,
yeah,
reading this and saying, yeah, yeah, testosterone, I'm my own man.
Yes, and I'm then, my own nation, really.
Yeah, really. Yeah. And then writing a budget based on that terribly damaged psychology. The news media treats it like it's real news when Sarah Palin said, it doesn't go far enough.
Yeah, and there's the problem. Once you've gone down the rabbit hole,
yeah,
it's never enough. It's never far enough. You know, you end up becoming the chicken farmer that the documentarian mentions in the Power of Nightmares.
Mm-hmm.
Your terrorist organization is never pure enough. So eventually it's just you and three of your friends declaring that everyone in the country needs to be killed because nobody's pure enough for you.
Yeah.
And Sarah Palin is leading that charge. As long as they continue to tack right,
mm-hmm,
there will always be a leader of the pack out front, out crazying everyone else and making all the pig people happy. The minute someone tries to put the brakes on that, they eat them alive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the monster they created. And we're living with the consequences of that. That is what we now live in. That's the political world we now live in, where the monsters that someone two or three generations ago dreamed up are now real and alive and stalking the land and fucking everything up that they touch. And Paul Ryan's budget is an absolute documentary, just a snapshot in history of this. And I, again, to get back to your original question, I have no idea why he did this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone in his party ran away from it.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone disavowed it. Nobody wants to talk about how we can screw the poor even more.
Right.
Because we want to have this discussion about income inequality, but we want to talk about it in terms of tax cuts and opportunity and blah, blah, all the stuff that they're never going to do. But nobody wants – and nobody wants to have that conversation with, again, a Catholic Randite.
Yeah.
Rand Paul, a someone who professes his faith and declares himself a Catholic, who at the same time believes this horribly brutal – Hobbesian, Darwinian approach to culture and life. That essentially, if you're too weak to survive, good. You should die and get out of the rest of our way. And that's the fine. When they start talking that way, you will know we've reached peak wingnut.
Mm-hmm.
When they start openly saying, I don't really care, whatever they do is their problem. They're not my problem. And we're getting closer. With Don Rumsfeld's face now coming to the surface, you're getting closer and closer to seeing that bared teeth animal.
Mm-hmm.
That they're desperately trying to put enough makeup on to let it pass muster in front of the camera. This vicious Neanderthal thing that mm-hmm. that party is owned by is getting closer and closer to being the face of the party.
Well, and that's why I have hope. It's because Harry Reid won last time.
Yeah.
Even though I would have appreciated someone much stronger in that Senate seat as a liberal and a fighter, he won over the Tea Party candidate.
Yeah.
And I think that political ads that say my opponent is funded by out-of-state billionaires, the Koch brothers, who just want permission to poison the water and screw workers.
Mm-hmm.
I think that can work. What's that?
Me?
Yeah.
I'm just getting a piece of paper ready.
Oh, what are you writing down your ads? Your ad copy?
No. I'm doing the, I've got Jim Hightower's column right here.
Oh, good, good, good. Yeah.
Speaking
we
of...
want everyone to read Jim Hightower's column from a few days ago.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to put it up at the Facebook page.
You want me to run it down really quick? It seems right on topic.
Right on topic. And it's about labor.
It's about labor and Catholicism.
Mm-hmm.
And the
mm-hmm.
abandonment of the Christian mission by so-called Christians
mm-hmm.
In favor of free market values. This is from Jim Hightower column, the symbolism of one adjunct professor's death. I will tell you in advance, I used to be an adjunct professor. As he mentions in this column, they teach half of the college courses out there.
It's amazing. And they get no benefits.
No benefits.
No retirement, no medical.
Nothing. Nothing.
They get paid to teach a class or three classes or four classes.
And you never know until, you know, 2 weeks before the semester starts how many classes you're going to teach and when they will be scheduled. So you have
and
no
how much money you're going to make because, you know, it could be $10,000 a year because you teach one class. Or, oh, no, we had a run on everybody wants to take your French class. So congratulations, you're going to be teaching a full course load with no benefits.
And you have no way of scheduling the rest of your life.
The rest of your
life.
Because
you have no idea.
You're doing the Walmartification of college education. Yeah. And people are fungible.
Absolutely fungible. Yeah. This is not an isolated case. This is what adjunct professors go through all across the country. And I was one of them. So her name was Margaret Mary Wojcicko. And she died last summer at the age of 83. And her death turned her name into a rallying cry for adjunct professors, adjunct college teachers. She had taught French classes for 25 years at Duquesne. See, you would know that being from
Pittsburgh. Because I'm Pittsburgh, yes.
She taught French classes at Duquesne University in Pittsburgh, earning high marks from her students. Her students liked her. Their praise helped make up for Duquesne's poor pay and lack of respect. Like most teachers, she was part of the adjunct faculty. No tenure, no bargaining power, and the schools can do whatever they want to her. And boy, did they ever. This provided no reliable income. She was never told until just before the semester began whether she'd be teaching three classes or one. Even in good years, with a full teaching load, her pay was below $25,000 with zero benefits.
And she's 83 still teaching, which is a sure sign that
she needs it.
She never had a retirement.
She was going to teach until she dropped, and that's literally what happened.
Yeah.
She had been cut to one class per semester. Her entire income was then under $10,000, and then her cancer came back, and it wiped her out. She couldn't pay her electric bills. Her stress level was off the charts, and yet she never missed a day of class. She was loyal to her students. She honored her commitment to them. And then in August, they found her sprawled in her front yard, having suffered a massive heart attack, and she died penniless, jobless, and literally heartbroken, having been thrown away by the university, this Catholic university that had used her for 25 years, used her and used her up. And they just, that's just really too bad. And the school said that we're not going to allow unions here because it would interfere with our Catholic mission. And so her case was picked up by Leo Gerard of the United Steelworkers, who's going to bypass all of the normal chain of command and go right to the Pope.
He's appealing to the Pope.
Direct appeal to the Pope. But this idea that this woman was absolutely used up, chewed up, and spit out, and left to die by a Catholic university, because A, they can get away with it, and B, the whole idea of organized labor interferes with their Christian mission. Is so disgusting.
Yep.
And so appalling, and so much a part of the Rand Paul, Paul Ryan vision of America. That there are just people that are disposable, and they are the ones upon whom everyone else's prosperity depends.
Well, and the other thing is that I find interesting about this is it's oligarchy once again.
Oh, yeah.
Where you are providing a ticket out and into the middle class with your diploma, supposedly, although now there's no jobs for graduates.
No, I can attest to that, too.
Also, there is such an inequality among colleges and universities between a place like Duquesne and a place like Harvard or Yale, where the squirrels have endowments.
Yeah.
And if you get in, you're going to go there so you can say you went. And the competition for the scraps of resources to compete with that leads administrators to say, oh, yeah, this is the only way we can do it.
Yeah,
we won't survive.
Yeah.
If we don't diminish the career of teaching to where it's just piecemeal. We cannot market ourselves.
Piecework.
Right. It is piecework because if only 14 students sign up for French this semester and we've hired her for three classes, we're wasting money.
Right.
We're wasting the resources of our donors. So that's their argument. And I understand why some universities and colleges are struggling. I also think there's too many community colleges in America. But, you know, because and that's the other interesting part. That was pork for years and years and years was you got a community college in your town, in your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And there are so many. I mean, when I lived in Birmingham, Alabama, every third block has a George Wallace Community College building on it. Seriously.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, the times have changed and these buildings are underutilized. They're white elephants. Uh-huh. But God forbid an alderman or a city councilman would say, oh, no, we'll just get rid of our community college building then you're against education. So a lot of it is politics and all of it is money. And that's a tragedy.
And it's a tragedy because the community college system mm-hmm. is a really important one.
It is.
I am a huge believer in a healthy, competently run community college system because they're the ones who deliver the sort of on the ground technical education that lots of people who can. I this was part of my job for years, mm-hmm. Trying to reform that system because these are the institutions that are uniquely situated that can deliver the kind of at the moment, not quite state of the art, but state of the industry training mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. upgrades to your skill set that people who actually will hire you into a middle class job desperately need.
Well, and the idea of that Barack Obama is always talking about of never stop learning, you know, that technology is going to change and you're going to need to go back to school for 6 weeks to learn how the new machine works in your machine shop or to learn how the new computer program works or how to design a new computer program, your specifications.
And for all of the very, very conservative owners of businesses I have worked with over the years, especially small businesses, especially small companies that make things, small factories, small manufacturing concerns. If you have a company with 20 people or 30 people privately held, and you want to upgrade your technology, you want to bring in new machines, mm-hmm. you don't have space or time or expertise to set up your own training department.
Right.
You absolutely have to have a community college that has the kind of equipment you're going to use and a staff that's well paid. And the problem with that is the most competent people you have on your shop floor are probably the best teachers, but they're also probably the best paid. So you actually have to pay people a decent wage to teach these things. And that's why you have this in places like this, you have this unique convergence of public and private interest. You have a real need for a community college, a college period where faculty is paid a living wage and receives decent benefits and receives a retirement plan because you need them in place to train the people that you as a company desperately need to have to stay in business. So if the system were functional and healthy and working the way it's supposed to, everybody would benefit from a virtuous circle, mm-hmm. but it isn't. It's broken. It's all based on what you have said over and over again is the cheap labor model of capitalism. Is let's drive labor costs to zero wherever possible, mm-hmm. and the fact that that labor costs means people is completely irrelevant to my construction of how society should work. And if they starve to death, well, that's not my problem.
And the other thing that makes me so angry about that argument, the argument that if we give people handouts, we destroy their incentive to work, uh-huh. is the people that are saying that on cable news have unpaid interns working for them.
Oh, yeah.
All over the place.
Yeah.
Where's their incentive to show up for work every morning? Oh, no, they're working for the experience.
Yeah.
To get their foot in the door.
Well, how many of those cable news assholes have made a good living on the side, hiring ghostwriters to write crappy books for them that then the Wingnut welfare system will reimburse them for.
Yep, absolutely.
Just because you have a different form of welfare based on directly sucking up to the Koch brothers doesn't make it less of a welfare system, doesn't make it less of a handout. Your value as a person to this society is effectively nil if you're Bill O'Reilly. Team Evil, as Petocchio said.
Pays well.
Pays really well. Speaking of paying really well, do you want to do 30 seconds on a hat tip to 10 Green and Peggy Noonan? Because, Peggy Noonan, it's no longer possible for me to be surprised by the depravity.
We were surprised this week. Both surprised by her column.
I thought I wasn't able to be shocked anymore, but I was actually shocked by how completely psychotic, and I've used that word too often, the sort of delirium tremens level of waterhead drunk that Peggy Noonan is exhibiting in her writing these days. It's really kind of...
Well, she wrote a column about Reagan.
Shockingly enough.
Actually, it was more about herself.
Yes.
And...
Let's remember, Peggy Noonan was a speechwriter for Ronald Reagan and has spent the last 30 or 40 years essentially living off of the waste heat from her association with Ronald Reagan.
I'll just read the first, like, four sentences because it really did make my chin drop to the floor.
I assumed she had passed out on May 31st.
Yeah. Okay.
And thought it was still April 1st.
Yeah, April Fool's
joke. And hey, here's an April Fool's joke. It's funny.
Yeah. People sometimes ask, what would Reagan think and what would Reagan do? I don't understand this and tend not to play. How would I know?
There's no reason why this woman has a job anywhere.
Anyway, but she's 10 grand at Mock Paper Scissors, I just want to say.
Who owns her?
Uh-huh. Has illustrated this column for us.
Yes.
And I highly recommend it. He owns Peggy Noonan, by the way. We've mentioned that before. He does. All right. This is the anniversary of the cancellation of the Smothers Brothers, by the way. That dates us.
Yeah. My God.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. See, now there's another time you could have gone back to.
Yeah.
Right? Right. Could go back to 1965 and be fighting getting drafted. So I wouldn't trade this moment for any other in history. I'm not thrilled with the fight we have to fight, but we have to fight it. And if it was another fight, I'm what's the word I'm looking for? I'm committed to the fight. And I've been put here in this time to fight this fight. And so I'm going to go for it.
It is your density.
It is my destiny.
Yeah. Sorry. But it kind of is. And this is where, you know,
like the song. It reminds me very much of the song in Cold Mountain. Do you remember where they're singing that kind of choppy a cappella hymn?
No.
Farewell, vain world, I'm going home.
Uh-huh. Nope.
And it's, I don't care to stay here long. And we have a short time on this earth, and we do the best we can. That's my goal, is to make the world a better place while I'm here.
Nope. What I remember about Cold Mountain especially is the mythology that the Confederate boys invented.
Yeah.
About the damn Yankees.
Yep.
And all the terrible villainies and deviltries that the Yankees are up to. These people who'd never been more than 10 miles from their home.
Yep. Yeah.
They had all this myth, and that is a direct lineal ancestor of Fox News. It's the mythology of what those terrible government monsters are up to, and the mythology of what those sneaky liberal devils are up to is the fear that drives the entire machine and will get. And we'll march these people right into the abyss over and over again, and they never fucking learn. So, and our job in this generation, like it is for every other generation, is to mitigate the damage they're causing and push back where we can. And when we see an opportunity to roll the stone up the hill a little further, we roll the stone up the hill a little further.
The other thing I remember, since we're talking movies on and off throughout this podcast.
We do that.
First of all, terribly, terribly miss Anthony Minghella as a director. He died way too young. Another one that died way too young.
Mm-hmm.
But his ability in this, and it, once you notice it, you will never not notice it if you go watch Cold Mountain again. All of the tricks that Anthony Minghella used to make Jude Law look as tall as Nicole Kidman. Ah. It's really funny. He's on a ladder. He's sitting down. He's 10 feet away from her. He's... and I think in a couple scenes, he's actually just standing on a box because that's what
we'll put her in a trench and him in boxes.
Yeah, exactly.
Wait a minute. That's Monty Python. So yeah. Scott of the Sahara.
Yeah. Yeah. No, exactly. Exactly. And that's also a great Philip Seymour Hoffman role that you will have forgotten about.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go and see what a dismal, awful person he plays. A drunk, lascivious preacher.
There's some movies you recall in much greater depth and breadth than I do. And that is...
Yeah, well, I loved that book. I thought the movie was good. All right. Let's look at our notes. Well, I've been waiting for you to talk about inflation for quite a while.
Okay, all right.
First of all, the inflation at the beginning of the universe. That's an old old story. But
that's literally the old.
And again,
story.
We've proven that the Big Bang did happen, and it doesn't matter.
And faster than light travel is possible, as long as you live with the first trillionth of a second of the universe.
See?
So, at the beginning of the universe, everything jumped forward really fast.
Mm-hmm.
Faster than is supposed to be possible, according to the theory of...
And they proved it.
Yep.
I don't know, understand how they proved it, and I never will, but...
Yeah. Well, there's supposed to be... Oh. The after effect of this thing, there's supposed to be gravity waves.
I have faith, Driftglass. Yes. I have faith in science.
I looked up in the night sky, and I saw... No,
you learned something about inflation, the inflation rate, which everyone's kind of in Germany is in a panic that the inflation rate's going to go up. And everyone, you know, anytime you increase government spending, you're increasing inflation. And this is we're going to go back to Jimmy Carter in the 70s if we do any government spending.
First of all, let me say, remember back 1,000 years ago, or was it 18 months ago when Greece was a thing?
Yeah.
Oh my God, Greece,
We're all going to become Greece, yeah.
Weird how things just fall off the headlines, isn't it?
Has to talk about Benghazi, you know.
Just the way inflation is calculated. Inflation as a number, if you've noticed everything you're buying going up in price, you're right. Mm-hmm. The cost of everything is going up. And yet the inflation rate, this completely fake number that we invented to explain the cost of things and whether they're going up and how we'll measure the cost of things now versus the cost of things 20 years ago, is calculated in a way that makes it look as though everything's sort of flat. We don't have inflation. There's no inflation. There's nothing going up. Well, the problem is, as I learned a few weeks ago, inflation is calculated using a whole bunch of different costs all put into a basket together. So the cost of phones, and the cost of food, and the cost of this, and the cost of that are all put into a basket. And the aggregate amount that they're going up, I'm sure economists out there are cringing at my explanation, but bear with me, are sort of taken and they're averaged, and this is the inflation rate. The problem is 40% of that basket is the price of housing. And so the fact that the housing market completely collapsed made the inflation rate look really low.
Mm-hmm. And you can't open a savings account for more than 1%. Forget it.
But it's really important to understand when you're listening to numbers, just listening to numbers, how they are calculated. For example, the unemployment rate is whatever it is today. It's lower than it used to be. It's low. It's getting lower every day. And that's a good thing. But the unemployment rate is based on labor participation.
Yep.
It's the rate of people who are currently – which is an arcane formula that should be updated. But it's based on all the people who, by the way this thing is calculated, people believe are still interested in having a job or still actively pursuing a job or have a job. The problem is
– or have been to the unemployment office in the past week. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
So labor force participation is the universe in which you calculate what percentage of those people don't have a job, what percentage do have a job.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is the universe is, in fact, a whole lot bigger than that.
Mm-hmm.
The actual, you know, this the Big Bang universe of unemployment is much larger. And the amount of people who've just dropped out of the labor force, mm-hmm. who just stopped looking or are underemployed,
mm-hmm.
like I am and will be probably for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
People like that, who have given up looking, who've run their benefits out, or who are chronically underemployed,
mm-hmm.
which is the largest it's been in, I don't know, 30 years or so, many, 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 many years.
Not to mention all those people who are living off of their retirement savings at age 48
to
55, and they're living off their 401ks $1,000 at a time until it runs out.
Yep.
And they will be the 83-year-old adjunct professors who die on their front lawn. That's what retirement is going to be for a whole lot of people.
So when you see inflation, understand that the inflation rate is a lie. It's not no one cooked it up yesterday to make it look bad. But the number you're being told doesn't correspond to the fact that your gas is going up or your food's going up or clothing costs are going up or everything else is going up. Because a big chunk of that is the price of housing. When you hear the unemployment rate is falling, that is a good thing. But the number of people, again, like me, who've just been jettisoned from the workforce, abandoned by my country and my economy to fend for myself, and I don't count anymore. I'm not even a statistic anymore.
Yep.
The millions and millions of people like me don't even show up in that statistic anymore. And that's why the unemployment rate is so much higher than it appears to be. And that's why, in a lot of ways, that group of people, my group of people, are screwed. Mm-hmm. Because no one's paying any attention to us anymore.
Yep.
We are the lost airplane that just flew away, disappeared into the ocean, and no one knows what happened to us. But we don't appear on the radar anymore, so we don't count.
We are a statistic, except they're not counting us anymore in terms of being uninsured, too.
Right.
You notice how 7.1 million people signed up for Obamacare?
Yeah.
So they're not talking about uninsured anymore?
Yeah, except
And we're uninsured because we're in line for Medicaid.
Uh-huh.
And I don't... I'm telling you, Dear Glass, you know that I know what day my children's prescriptions expire.
Yes.
And that I have to go and pick them up. You know, I know, I have it in my head what day my and my children are covered. Our children are covered. But you know, I have in my head the status of everything that goes on with the health of this family.
Yes.
I do not know what the status of my Medicaid application is.
No.
And I have called my state rep, who has not returned my call. I have called the DHS office, which has not returned my call. Yesterday I mailed an appeal, a formal appeal form to the DHS office, appealing my denial, whatever it is, to get on a wait list.
And they
to somebody.
We got denied for reasons that were wrong.
That we didn't apply for.
Yeah. Yet.
You don't get this because it was stuff I didn't apply for.
Yeah.
And I really have to think that because they're so inundated with applications, and we are lucky, ladies and gentlemen, we are lucky that we live in Illinois where they're expanding Medicaid. Don't get me wrong.
Yep. Yep.
There's hope. I mean, in some ways, it's worse because we actually are sitting here knowing that the light is at the end of the tunnel. We just can't get there. We have no vehicle to get there.
And we have no idea how far away it is.
Yeah, we don't know.
And
that's anguish. It's not the anguish of knowing there is no light at the end of the tunnel.
No.
But the thing is, I have no idea where we are in the line, in the list, anything.
And
I think they are just denying people based on their old regs that say they have to give you a decision in 45 days.
Right. So deny.
And then you buy more time.
And the hundreds of temps they've hired.
800 temps.
Just to process the demand.
Yep.
And think about let me give one example.
You have to get 150 folders off your desk today. You're a temp worker and you have to get 150 folders off your desk today.
And you walked in the door.
Yeah.
And here's a pile of folders as high
and
as
thank
your,
God you've got a job, right? As a temp.
Here's a pile of folders as high as your desk. You need to process these today if you want to keep that job.
Yep.
You've been in touch in some ways with the governor's office.
Yes, I have.
In touch with our senator.
Oh, yes, I called Dick Durbin's office and he referred me to the state representative, his secretary or the woman answering the phone.
And
very helpful, very nice, really wanted to help. But no calls back from anybody. And I know that what we're hearing from all of these people, the reason they're not calling back is the line is long. And that's the answer.
And one other little detail. There was another rejection on the basis of
past medical bills. Yes.
Well, there was another rejection based on an arrangement you had made.
Yeah.
And they had basically had this checklist and nope. It's here's the denial list. My wife went out to the federal website and looked up the law.
I did.
And checked the regulation and said, no, you got it wrong. Right. This, in fact, does not disqualify me. Paragraph, chapter, and verse.
Yeah, not to get too into the weeds of my personal situation, but the expanded Medicaid discounts child support. You do not include child support in your income when you apply for expanded Medicaid. And there's this magic word called MAGI, M-A-G-I, Modified Adjusted Gross Income, which I now know that magic word to get me in the door. And I printed out the thing from Medicaid.gov to say, by the way, my MAGI does not include child support. And the thing is, Driftglass, they are using the pre-Obamacare expansion computer system.
Yes.
Which is designed by the state
to reject people.
No, it's designed by like a snake.
Yes.
To go through every computer record out there as to what your income is.
Yeah, it
and
looks
they can
everywhere.
Find everything.
Every from, nickel you've
from
got.
Desk, every nickel you've got. They can find tax records, Social Security records, they know if I have heating assistance. They know anything that is government money,
uh-huh.
including divorce decrees. If they are, there's a court order, they have that on the computer.
Mm-hmm.
You have court order that you're getting court ordered child support. They know that, and it
yep.
their system is designed to deny people based on income so that you're not cheating.
Right. Got it. And that's fine.
Except that the rules have changed under expanded Medicaid.
Yes. And there's the problem.
They have this and they've had 2 years and no money mm-hmm. to set up a new system. So
this is why it is so important to keep pushing.
Pushing.
Because you
because
can see
yeah.
because you worked in customer service for many years.
Yeah.
I've worked every kind of job you can imagine related to technology, mm-hmm. government, customer service,
yeah.
case management,
yep.
project planning, everything that mm-hmm. is involved in this expansion, I know how it works.
Yep.
And the problem they're having can be fixed with more money.
Yeah.
Really, it's that simple. If you increased funding, if you hired more people, if you got them properly trained, if you tweaked
if you put the same level of intensity on fixing the Medicaid system in Illinois that they did on fixing the Obamacare website and said, look, this has to be fixed in 3 weeks.
Right.
Do it.
Yeah. It'd be done.
There's no money to do that.
And there is simply no. So it's not an impossible problem. It's not unfixable. It's not even unfathomable. It's very fixable, very doable. They are simply under-resourced and overwhelmed.
And they are using the incorrect criteria to put people on. They really should. There are three pieces of information they need. Do you live in Illinois? Are you who you say you are? And does your tax return reflect an income that qualifies you? Period. That's it. But they have a system that looks for child support, that looks for heating assistance, that looks, you know, and says, oh, no, you can't have that because you have this amount of savings or you have the guy at the DHS office wanted to look at my life insurance.
Yes.
If you have any life insurance, we need to look at it.
Yeah.
Because if it's an investment life insurance, that can disqualify you. No, it can't. Actually, no.
And to be clear, they've gotten everything they've asked for from us.
Yes.
Everything.
Oh, yeah.
And every time we have been in contact, by we, I mean you,
mm-hmm.
I promise I will get back to you in the next day or two.
Yeah, 48 hours.
Never got a call
back. Never.
I swear you will hear from someone from X office tomorrow. Never hear back.
My supervisor will call you
back. I promise you on the life of my children, you'll hear back from us in 2 days at the latest. Never heard back from it.
Yeah. I've gotten to the point where I say, no, you won't.
Over and over and over and over again.
Yep.
And these are not people who are shirking or slacking. They are simply drowning.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel real, real pity for the people who don't have my wife in their corner.
Exactly. I feel horrible.
Who know where to look, what to look up, how to access information, how to collate information, how to make sense of legalese, and what records to have with you at all times.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And patience and persistence.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a system. Again, this is yet another system where you are right on the knife's edge here.
Yeah.
Would this system be better if we adopted the Ryan budget and block granted Medicare to our next Republican governor? Or would this system be better if we took a couple of $1 million and invested in making it work efficiently and smoothly and well and in a friendly way to the people who are going to be using the system for the next 20 goddamn years?
Yep.
Those are your choices.
Then there's the whole unfairness of it where banks get to call themselves investment institutions when it benefits them in terms of government handouts. And
yes.
then they decide they're not a bank when the regulations come down that they're supposed to obey.
Yeah.
No, we're not a bank or we're not an investment institution. We're just a bank.
And there will be these fights for the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
And Cokes will come and go. Supreme Courts will come and go. But these fights over our values and how we treat people and what you as a citizen have a right to expect from your government, these fights will go on. And we need you in them with us.
We need you there. Thank you for being there. Each week, we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitties are Squeaker and Junia. They are 2 out of 4 strays who came to live with one of our listeners, but the other two kitties will not sit still for a photo. So screw you. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. We've gotten a few internet kitties in the email this week. We appreciate it very much. And we never say wait list or no. wait or no. you're waiting or you're in no. line. We just no. say that we will inform you when it is your kitty's time to ascend.
Yes. We also never say we'll get back to you within 48 hours.
No, we don't. And so just know that if you've sent us an internet kitty, I always email the person who sent it and say, your kitty is the internet kitty this week, so that you know.
Yes.
And you don't have to keep listening every week to find out. We want you to know that ahead of time. All right. And we love hearing from you. Please write to us. We love hearing from you. And be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. So, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the internet kitties would like everyone to know that the liquid coughed up after a hairball is called a scalia.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under Creative Commons license, copyright 2014, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast. I think there's a little scalia under the dining room table.
Yeah, I got to get to that scalia. You really don't want to touch that with your bare hands. Oh.
I'll need a dry paper towel followed by a wet paper towel, yeah. please. Followed and by it's a... not Koch Brothers paper towel.
No. No.
Now, we're not doing a science fiction university this week. Uh-huh. I just have one piece of housekeeping I need to let everyone know.
Sure.
Next week's podcast will be late. We are launching three children.
Yes.
Off with their dad for spring break next Friday. So, and that's happening in the middle of the day. So,
yeah,
bear with us. Podcast will go up. We will do a podcast, but it's going to not be quite at the usual time.
Yes.
And thank you, Driftglass.
Thank you, Blue Gal. Love you too.